little bit of a delayed beginning. Before I open up a work session, just want to announce what we're, the plan today is to indeed have a begin a work session on Department of Higher Education Senate Bill 5515. That's what we're going to do first. And then in the latter part of the hour and a half, we're going to have a work session on House Bill 2574A relating to mentoring, the bill that we weren't able to finish when we last met. So we'll take care of that towards the end of today's meeting. So with that, I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 5515, Department of Higher Education. And I'm going to turn it over first to Steve Bender from Legislative Fiscal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Today is the first of 3 days that you have scheduled for a work session on Senate Bill 5515, which is the operating budget bill for the Department of Higher Education. We sort of have a basic outline of how we expect the next 3 days to go. Today I would like to provide a background for you on some of the budget issues facing the Department of Higher Education and focus on the general fund and lottery fund components of their budget. Tomorrow we will be looking more closely at the agency's performance measures and also focusing on the other funds portion of the Department of Higher Education operating budget. And then finally, on Thursday, the hope is to go through a recommendation and to report the budget back to the full Ways and Means Committee. I do apologize for not having gotten any materials out to you prior to this meeting. If you were looking for some and couldn't find them, that's because they weren't there. But I have distributed two items for you today, which we will go over. One is a one-page sheet that looks similar to sheets that you've seen in the past that compares the recommendation to the governor's budget. Earlier versions of this had shown the co-chair's budget compared to the governor's budget. And there's also an item that's labeled LFO recommendation, Department of Higher Education, Senate Bill 5515, which we will also be going through. Prior to that, we have asked the department to come up and report on their progress toward meeting affirmative action goals. This was one of the items that was on the presentation list that we did not get to earlier during the public hearing, and we've asked the department to come forward and make a brief presentation to explain their progress toward meeting affirmative action goals. If there aren't any questions, I guess we can go ahead.
Okay, thank you very much. And Chancellor, I was going to say it's the Chancellor Prinsteiner. Welcome. We'd love to hear from you. If you are indeed the person who will be doing this, and it appears that that is correct.
Well, thank you, Chair Galizio, members of the committee. For the record, my name is George Prinsteiner with the Oregon University System, and thanks for the opportunity to be back here with you. I appreciate that very much. As we mentioned to the subcommittee before, the face of Oregon is changing, and the percentage of high school graduates from diverse backgrounds is expected to increase substantially over the next several years. And we've mentioned before that this will require us and our universities to change our outreach and our pedagogy to educate these students so that they can be full participants in a robust, information-enabled global economy. But it also places more importance than ever on building a workforce that is reflective of the way Oregon is and will be as that is emerging. The State Board of Higher Education has two policies that frame its affirmative action approach. And as with any other state agency, we are bound by the same statutes and rules as other state agencies. But in addition to that, the board has enacted a couple of rules that deal with non-discrimination and with a request that, if asked by campuses, that the Chancellor's Office will provide assistance to them. So that's sort of a legal framework within which we operate. The Chancellor's Office and each campus provides separately to the state its own affirmative action plan. So we have basically eight plans that are presented to the state each year. This year, only seven were presented. The preparation of the plans is done in the fall, And at that time, we were given a waiver by the state for Southern Oregon University because, as you know, Southern Oregon University was in the midst of some major restructuring at that time, and it was not possible for them to be able to forecast where they would come out of that restructuring at the time that they prepared the plan. So the seven plans are, in fact, in the hands of the governor's office, and we are operating from those. If you were to look at those, you'd see that each campus approaches the situation a little bit differently and approaches it based on the workforce of its own area as well as the kinds of discipline mix which it has with respect to the programs that it offers. For some campuses and for the chancellor's office, it's very simple. I mean, for our office, we're looking for one paraprofessional to fill out the total plan. But with regard to Oregon State University, for example, they have very detailed targets for each college and each major administrative organization for tenured faculty, for tenured and tenure track faculty, for fixed term and adjunct faculty, and for staff, so that they look in each of those categories for each of the areas. So that, in fact, is part of the process that they go through each year. And you can look at every one of the campuses with regard to how it is approaching it, but they all have the same goal of trying to ensure that they have a workforce that is reflective as much as possible of the workforce of Oregon while still meeting the needs that the universities have for a qualified faculty in particular. The real test for me, though, is not what process we use. It's what is the result in the end. And rather than go through each and every one of these and talk about the results, I'm going to cut to the bottom line and say, what happened in the last 2 years? If you look at the 2003-04 results, you will find that, and I'm going to turn first to faculty, between 2003-04 and 2005-06, two-year cycle, the total number of faculty who were white males increased by 9. The total number of faculty who were white females increased by 86. The number of minority males on faculty went up by 28. And the number of minority females on faculty increased by 42. So that even though we have not yet reached the targets overall that had been set, you can see that almost 95% of the additional faculty that we have on staff, and we do have more faculty than before, are either persons of color or are women. For the non-faculty workforce, the results are not quite as dramatic, but still 72% of the increase in the workforce, in fact, is either for persons of color or for women. So that even, you know, sort of laying aside the methods used, what is the effect? And the effect has been progress in the last 2 years, and we're hopeful that progress will continue because it's essential that we do so with the changing demographics of the state. So I know that there's a lot of detail in there, but if you have any questions, I'll be happy to try to answer.
Are there any questions for the chancellor? We're going to be reading. Very much appreciate it, Chancellor Prinzheimer. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Steve Bender from OFO.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Of the two documents that I've distributed today, I'd like to first refer to the one-page sheet that is in a format that's very similar to what you've seen earlier. Though I probably won't spend most of our time going through that, I just wanted to point out some changes from the prior version that you have seen of this table for the Department of Higher Education. And the changes are as follows. First thing that might be very obvious is the new column's been added on the left that indicates the package in the Department of Higher Education budget that these particular funding items are relating to. As you know, in each state budget,
There are a number of packages which reflect either changes to the current to the essential budget level or that represent development of the essential budget level. And these particular funding amounts are related to particular packages. The reason I'm putting this in here is that as we go through the recommendations, we will be referring to package numbers in the recommendations. So you can see here clearly which funding sources, which funding items are related to which particular packages. But there are other changes from versions that you've seen earlier, and they are as follows. They have two types. In one type, the LFO recommendations are somewhat different from the last co-chair numbers that you've seen. And another change is that there are some additional items listed on this chart that were not listed on the previous table of this format that you had seen. The reason primarily for that is the table had been focusing on items where there were differences, at least at some point in time, between the co-chair's budget and the governor's budget, even though many of those differences had been eliminated by the last time we saw this table. But there are a number of additional items that have been added in this particular table now that we can go through. However, before doing that, I would, if I may, with your indulgence, go back to the memo that we have. And even though today we are talking about general and lottery funds, I wanted to just refer to the table on the bottom of page 1, which is the LFO recommendation for the operating budget for Department of Higher Ed, and talk a bit about the different fund types, some of which we will talk about later. And if you look here at the fund types, first of all, the two fund types that we're going to be focusing on today, general fund and lottery fund. General fund and lottery fund dollars are used to support the following program areas in the Department of Higher Education's operating budget. And you can see those as the bulleted items, which are about halfway down that page. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about the organization of this budget and how it's proved and the authority that higher ed has to transfer funds or to move funds that you have appropriated to them. The funds for general fund and lottery fund are appropriated into the 6 program areas that you see listed there. And higher ed, or the State Board of Higher Ed, has no authority to transfer general fund or lottery funds between these or among these 6 categories. The only entity that can do that is the legislature or the emergency board during the interim. The first area that general fund and lottery fund dollars support is what is known as the Education and General Services Program Area of Higher Ed. And this is by far the largest component or use of the general fund and lottery fund dollars. All of the programs of higher education that relate to the operations, the state-supported operations of the 7 campuses, the branch campus in the Bend, and the chancellor's office and other centralized programs are funded in the Education and General Services program area. These include support for instruction, research, and public services. The next 3 items to which general fund is provided are the 3 entities that together are known as the Oregon State University Statewide Public Service Programs. These are programs that OSU administers within its function as the state's land-grant university. And as a land-grant institution, it receives federal funds for a number of these particular programs that we see here, the next 3 programs that we see here. But they are the Agricultural Experiment Station, Extension Service, and Forest Research Laboratory. Again, these are budgeted as 3 separate line items in the OUS budget, and the State Board cannot transfer funds between them. Also, as far as Oregon State University is concerned, they are, again, the recipients of all funds for these 3 programs. Oregon State also cannot transfer funds that you appropriate between these programs. But as a practical matter, there are numbers of faculty that OSU hires and supports that are funded by more than one of these sources. So to some extent, the institution will combine these funding sources in order to support its research and academic programs.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, for example, Mr. Bender, the money that is in basic university support, that's undesignated, would that be able to be applied to, say, the Institute for Natural Resources or the public service programs?
It would not be able to be applied toward the Agricultural Experiment Station, Extension Service, or Forest Research Lab, which are separate line items in the budget. The funds for the, if you provide funds for, specifically for OSU Natural Resources, even though they would be included within the total for education and general services, we would identify that in the budget report, and the campus and system would be expected to apply those funds specifically to that program and not to other programs.
Just for clarification here, but if there was the Package 101 basic university support, would the university system be able to apply that money to any program within the budget?
It would basically, there are a broad range of programs that it could apply those funding, that funding toward, and it could, a university could allocate some of those funds toward its public service programs, unless you designated that that was not, we were not eligible to use those funds for that purpose. But absent any particular designation, if it was just basic university support, presumably the institutions could use that for any of the programs that they are receiving state support dollars.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Please continue. Okay. The next program that receives general fund lottery funds is the Sports Action Lottery Program, and we'll be talking a bit about that today because there are some adjustments from the level in the governor's budget. Sports Action Lottery Funds, even though that particular lottery program has been discontinued or was discontinued last session by the legislature, the actual Sports Action Games were discontinued, there remains a Sports Action Lottery program in the Department of Higher Education budget, the funds from which support intercollegiate athletics programs, about 88% of them, and 12% of them funds are used for scholarships for graduate students that have no relation to athletics at all. These are just general graduate student scholarship programs. And finally, the last item that receives general fund and lottery fund is the debt service area. Debt service, general fund is provided to pay debt service on Article 11 G bonds and for repayment of state energy loan proceed program loans. And lottery funds are provided to pay debt service on lottery bonds. These are bonds that have been issued for capital construction projects at the Oregon University System. That's the basic discussion of where the general fund and lottery fund dollars go. I'd now, if you look at the table at the bottom of page one, you'll see that the next row is labeled other funds, and in the LFO recommendation, these other funds total up to over $1.2 billion. And I'd like to talk a bit, even though we're going to go in more detail tomorrow, at least mention what these funds are and what they're used for. In general, not always, but in many program areas, what the other funds in the OUS budget are used for is that they are combined with the general fund and lottery fund dollars that the state provides in order to support the particular program area activities. This is not always the case, but if we go back to see, again, at the list of bullet items, if you look to see where the general fund is going, we can go to each of those areas and talk about other funds that add up to $1.2 billion that are combined. In education and general services, the general fund that's provided by the state is combined with the other funds, primarily tuition and fees, student fees, And these dollars are combined and are used to operate the programs of the seven campuses and the centralized programs as well. The total amount of tuition revenues out of that $1.2 billion is about $1 billion. So most of that 1.2 is tuition and student fees. We'll talk tomorrow a bit more about the other 200,000 and where that is coming from. But primarily we have a combination of these funds in order to operate the programs. So what we're going to have to look at is look at not only the general fund and lottery fund support, but also look at the other fund support in order to be able to determine what this budget allows the, you know, the campuses and the system to do. In the Agricultural Experiment Station, Extension Service, and Forest Research Laboratory, the other funds are also combined with the general fund to operate these programs. These other funds, some of them come, they're actually really federal dollars, but they're shown as federal, as other funds here. Some of them are, for example, with the Extension Service, there are significant county funds that go in. But again, these are primarily funds that are combined with the general fund in order to support the programs of the statewide public services. The Sports Action Lottery does not have any other funds in it, but if you think of what the funds are being used for, they're being used to support intercollegiate athletics and graduate scholarships. Well, in terms of the intercollegiate athletics budget, there are other sources of funds that these are being combined with. And indeed, there is some general fund support for intercollegiate athletic programs. So to that extent, there is a combination of these lottery funds with that general fund, though it doesn't show up in the Sports Action Lottery program. Debt service, we're really not combining these other funds with general fund and lottery fund. These other funds would, in debt service, represent debt service for other types of bonds, Article 11 F1 bonds and COPs that are self-supporting and not receiving state support to cover that debt service. But together, that is the $1.2 million of other funds. And then the last number, which is actually the biggest number in the column LFO recommendation, other funds NL, that stands for other funds non-limited. Non-limited means just that, that the budget will not, does not impose any restriction on the expenditure of these funds. And there are an awful lot of them. So the question is, what is the department, what are these $2.2 billion of expenditures that are just sort of going on without any restriction by the legislature in the budget? And what these represent are, these represent programs that are essentially funded exclusively by other funds and not combined with the general fund and lottery fund that the state is supporting. So when there are programs that are financed by a combination of general fund and other funds, those other funds are limited. When there are programs that are not financed by general fund and lottery funds, generally speaking, you do not limit those expenditures. So what do we mean? What are some programs that higher ed operates that do not receive any state support, and that therefore all of the revenues that they are generating may be spent in a non-limited fashion? And there are a number of different primary areas. One of these sources of other funds that are non-limited include the research grants, federal research grants, for example, that the institutions, that the campuses and the chancellor's office receive, mostly on a competitive basis. These are awarded on a competitive basis. And when a faculty member is successful, or a group of faculty members is successful in receiving a research grant, and it really doesn't have to be from the federal government, it could be from another entity, and they are able to spend those monies. You don't restrict or limit those monies that they spend that are coming from those sources. Another major source of non-limited funds, or category of non-limited funds, are the auxiliary activities. These are activities that are not funded by the state, or at least not directly funded by the state. In some cases, we do have some indirect funding by the state. But the auxiliary activities are everything from housing and dining facilities to student health services. They would include a lot of the intercollegiate athletic programs, though, as we've said earlier, there is some general fund support for those particular programs. This would also include probably missing some big ones here.
Parking
would be one. I think there are bigger ones I'm missing right now. But these are programs that are supported by fees for services, essentially. Another major source, however, of the nominated other funds are that some of the student aid dollars that flow into the system, that flow into the OUS accounting system and are spent as by the institutions, are non-limited. You do not limit the student aid that's being awarded. And these become funds that are accounted for and spent in higher ed because the student aid funds typically, or almost exclusively, do not go directly to the student. They go to the campus, which then awards them to the student. So it goes through the university's accounting expenditures. We note them, but we don't limit them. Are there any questions about that basic structure? Because if there aren't, I'd like to talk about general fund and large.
Doesn't look like there are any questions. So.
If I could ask you to turn to the back of page one. There's a table here that talks about the LFO recommendation for general fund and lottery funds and shows how it differs from the governor's recommended budget level. I'd like to note, first of all, that this actually replicates some of the information that you see on this chart here, but it is more inclusive. It includes some things that aren't shown on here, and I think it may be better to look at this table, but if you find that this table isn't useful as we're going through it, just let me know and we can go back to the earlier table and try to find the same information in that format which you've seen before. But what this table is showing is it is showing a number of elements that add up to the total amount of general fund and lottery fund dollars in the governor's recommended budget. If you look at column C, you can see that the governor recommended $585,554,281 of general fund and lottery funds. Column C shows exactly and divides that into all of these different categories. Columns D shows the co-chair changes. So most of these you've seen before. Column E shows some additional changes that LFO is recommending. So these you haven't typically seen before. And column F is just the sum of these. So if you look at column F, you can see how the LFO recommendation in total compares to the level of funding in the governor's budget. And then finally, columns G and H show exactly after you make those changes what's left and how much there is in general fund and lottery fund for all of these particular areas. So if we were going specifically through the budget and asking for your approval of an LFO recommendation, basically we would start with line 5 and go through each one. So let me just mention what some of these items are. Line 5 represents the essential budget level calculation that's in the governor's budget for everything in the operating budget except debt service. I've taken debt service out and put that into rows 6 and 7. But the reason I've separated this out and shown the essential budget level except for debt service is that it's going to be our recommendation that you approve essentially the calculations that are in the budget for the essential budget level for everything except debt service. So in other words, that you fund at the same level as in the governor's budget, the essential budget levels of general fund and lottery fund. The number, if you look at row 5, the numbers there in G and H are just the same numbers that were combined together in column C for the governor's recommended budget. So for that large portion of the budget, there's no change. All of the differences are being shown in rows 6 through 24. And what rows 6 and 7 show is that We are recommending that you not accept the essential budget level calculations for debt service for a number of reasons, or really just two reasons. And the reasons are, it turns out what the essential budget level for debt service is supposed to include is it's supposed to include the actual cost to the department of paying debt service on instruments that have been approved in the budget. So this would be debt service for general fund on Article 11G bonds and self-loan repayments, and on Row 7, debt service for lottery bonds. The governor's budget included amounts that were supposed to be, or that were the estimates or projections of what the cost would be. But we have updated projections. So LFO is recommending that you reduce general fund debt service by $6.6 million and that you reduce lottery fund debt service by almost $1.6 million above that. The amount that would remain would fully fund the debt service that we now know. The reason we have these updated projections is because now all of the bonds that will be sold in the current biennium, 05-07 biennium, have been sold. When the governor was putting the budget together, they had to project how many of these bonds would be sold and at what interest rate. And now we know that the interest rate was substantially lower than projected, and that some of the bonds were actually not sold because typically it would be the case that the institutions hadn't raised the matching funds that they needed yet in order to do that. So this represents a reduction in expenditures of about $8.1 million, but it will not affect the institution's operations at all. It's just taking out funding that is not needed for these purposes. So if you choose, the legislature can use these funds for another purpose. The next items, rows 8 through 12, represent what we've been calling in this earlier table the base, the base education programs. This is the funding for regional support, faculty salaries, student faculty ratio, enrollment growth, and utility costs. As you may recall, the governor recommended specific amounts for these five different items that you can see there in column C. Again, we're looking at rows, rows 8 through 12. The co-chairs combine these amounts into a single amount and requested that this subcommittee determine how those amounts should be divided and to look into that particular issue. What LFO did was they went back to higher ed and asked higher ed, what would your preference be at this point? We know what your initial preference was when the governor's budget was submitted. Has anything changed with new information, and would you have any recommendations for changing that initial allocation or use of the $40.7 million that was added above the essential budget level? And they replied that they would not change the distribution from what had been earlier proposed. So for purposes of this point of the LFO recommendation, we are going back to what the governor's recommended budget allocations were. So they will show no changes from the governor's recommended budget. However, we will have more information for you when we look at this further tomorrow and on Thursday as to the impacts of these particular decisions on how to allocate these funds. So if indeed the committee does have any questions either for us or for the agency about how this allocation would work and might want to consider a different allocation of the funds, you're certainly, under the co-chair's directives, free to adjust these if you would want to do that. The next item, which we won't talk about further today, which is on row 13, is an employee count change that is a technical adjustment in the governor's budget that actually didn't involve any funding, but did involve changes in the number of employees that are funded in the budget. And we will look at that further. I do want to note that there's a difference in the way that employees are funded in the higher ed budget and the way that they are funded in generally in state agencies. in that in state agencies, the budget actually projects the cost of the budget actually authorizes positions, indicates what those positions are and what the associated salary levels are for those positions, and then projects what the cost is and assures that there's funding from some source for that, either general fund, lottery fund, other funds, however those positions are funded. For the higher education budget, higher education is exempt from position control through the state's Department of Administrative Services, as other agencies are under that control. And the department can establish positions and eliminate positions as it sees fit. It must, though, of course, it only has a certain amount of funds, so they're going to try to keep however many positions are established at the levels that they can afford. But in terms of the establishment of positions and how much the positions, the individuals are paid, the Department of Administrative Services does not control that, and in the state budget you do not directly control that either.
Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Steve, how does line 13 relate to the 578 increase in FTE positions?
That is line 116 actually reduces position counts by 21. So if that were not there, the increase would have been 21 higher.
Looking at your summary of FTE, legislative approval 507 to 0709 recommendation, we have an increase of 578 FTE.
Yes, and most of these increases are coming from a number of programs, and actually, if I may respond to your question immediately and directly, in the packet that you have before you, if you start looking at the work session action report that starts immediately after the page you are looking at, and if you look at the right two columns, you can see where these additional positions are being funded. For example, on page 1 of 19, if you look down about 4/5 of the page, you'll see that there are 36 positions that are being added from the $9 million that's being added to support the activities of the regional universities. If you go on to page 2, you can see that there are 90 positions here that are being added to reduce the student-faculty ratio. One of the largest increments is 393 additional positions from the enrollment growth package, and on and on. I would like to state that LFO does need to work with higher ed to make some adjustments to some of these full-time equivalent amounts, and we will have that for you before you take a vote on this, but this is essentially in the budget as it was presented by the governor with some of the adjustments that we've made here does show where these positions are, how these positions are being funded.
Thank you.
A number of things also to note is that, for example, the faculty salary catch-up position on page 1, that's package 112, you'll see there are no positions added there. And this, of course, makes sense in the sense that these funds are designed to supplement compensation for faculty and not to hire new faculty, whereas some of these other things, such as to reduce the student-faculty ratio, those funds are focused toward hiring additional faculty, and you see additional FTE there. If I may go back to this page here that we were looking at, this chart on the back of page 1, some of the other differences that are there are, we're now in row 14, the OSU statewide public services combined, the governor's recommended budget recommended an increase of $5.5 million, and the amount in the LFO recommendation reflects the co-chair's changes. So you can see in column G there is a $3 million increase over the central budget level in this recommendation. for the healthcare initiative, and we can talk about any of these in more detail now if you'd like, or when we go through the recommendation. But Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Binder, with regard to the statewide public services, can you talk to us about what the co-chair's rationale was for cutting that budget by $2.5 million?
The co-chairs were looking to balance the overall general fund and lottery fund budgets and believe that simply because of other priorities that they were focusing on and trying to provide support for, that $3 million increase in the above the essential budget level was what they could support in this particular budget. To my knowledge, there was no particular decision that $5.5 million would not have been desirable or acceptable for these programs. I believe it was primarily a question of prioritization.
So there was no discussion around potential alternate sources of revenue or...
Not in discussions with me.
Thank you.
Please. Please. The healthcare initiatives in row 15 support a number of program expansions at Oregon Institute of Technology, which offers a number of allied healthcare programs, as well as expansions among other campuses for nursing and pre-nursing programs and other healthcare types of programs, and some in total just short of $7.4 million. There's no difference here, as you can see, between the amount in column G and the amount in the governor's budget in column C for these programs. Number 16, or row 16, is the Engineering, Technology, and Industry Council. The governor's budget had recommended a supplement of $17 million over the essential budget level. Again, the essential budget level is approximately $20.5 million, and this represented an 82% increase.
Just a question for Mr. Bender on ETIC. I understand the original request. I don't know if that's the one that was forwarded by OUS. Was for $34 million.
Yes.
The governor cut it to 17.
Yes.
Of course, the co-chairs are now at 10. Do we know for the difference between 10 and 17? Could we state in any certainty what the impact is on the program in terms of what would be funded or not funded at levels between those two figures?
I cannot respond to that today, though we have asked OUS to provide more specific information, and my understanding is that they are planning to do that tomorrow when we talk about the performance measures.
Thank you, Senator Devon. Representative Jensen.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I go back to the OUS SWPSs. Was there any discussion on the part of the co-chairs as to what impact this $2.5 million cut above the governor's recommended level would have on the statewide public services?
I did not have a specific discussion with them about the specific impact of the $2.5 million difference in funding levels.
Mr. Chair, with your indulgence, when you bring this back up, could we ask the OSU to provide us that information?
Absolutely.
Okay. So I think what we're going to do is we're going to get through these and then maybe
whenever it fits your agenda.
The next item, which has the acronym IDTS, this acronym stands for the Integrated Data Transfer System. And what it represents is an information technology project that has been in, that is, that was initially funded in this biennium in order to improve the transfer of student data to the Oregon University system from both high schools and community colleges. This is a project that was funded at a higher level in the prior biennium, and OUS requested $837 million in order to complete this, the implementation of this project, and the governor's recommended budget funded that amount. We have a very unusual change here in that LFO is actually recommending that you increase this funding by $400,000 to $1,237,000. And the reason why we're recommending that is it turns out that the funds for the integrated data transfer system are being spent at a different rate than had been anticipated, and that $400,000 in costs, which had been previously approved and had been expected to be incurred in 2005-07, actually will not be incurred until 2007-09. So we are recommending that you increase the funding by $400,000 to allow the program to cost to be paid for as they are being incurred by the department. Our recommendation, though it does not show on this table, will be to actually transfer the $400,000 from the general fund appropriation for 2005-07 to 2007-09 to reflect the fact that this is a timing of expenditures issue. So in other words, the $400,000 will be made available from the reduction of the appropriation level for 2005-07, which would result in a larger noted ending balance. I mean, of course, if you didn't do that, the money still would have been eventually in the ending balance, but this way you'll know for budget purposes that it will be there as you're working to finalize the 2007-09 biennial budget. Representative Morgan.
Just for my own personal clarification here, so Mr. Bender, if the program is funded at $400,000 rather than $837,000, the program will not, there won't be any reductions in the way the program is implemented?
I'm sorry, Representative, I was unclear. Our recommendation is not that the program be funded at $400,000 instead of $837,000. Our recommendation is that you increase the funding by $400,000 so that the amount you see in column G, the total funding, is $1,237,000. Again, we do not see any increase in the total two biennium costs of the program. It's just a question of the timing of when these costs are incurring.
So the $400,000 is being carried over from the current biennium?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And just for clarification, it wasn't $837 million that the governor had.
Oh, was that what I said?
I don't know. I'm hearing things.
No, I probably said that. I'm sorry.
I think they'd be happy to take that.
The next item is the Rural Access Initiative. This is row 18 we are on, package 304 in the budget. And the Rural Access Initiative is an Eastern Oregon University initiative to improve, to essentially help assist students to increase the college participation rate for students in Eastern Oregon by establishing a number of off-campus centers that will introduce students in Eastern Oregon to potential possibilities for enrollment in universities. The governor's recommended budget had included $1.6 million, and the LFO recommendation is to reduce that to $580,000. This would be consistent with the funding that's provided in the co-chair's budget. And the initial plan under the governor's budget was to establish four sites that would sit in Eastern Oregon the first year of the upcoming biennium, and then to expand that to six sites in the second year of the upcoming biennium. At the reduced level of funding, they would only be able to support one or two sites unless they changed their business model or their plans of how they plan to operate that. And they may conceivably do that at the reduced level of funding. But this would be more of a, make it more of a pilot project to see how it is working and indeed whether it is proving to be successful in helping to increase college participation rates in that region of the state. Representative Jensen?
Yes. Was there any discussion among the co-chairs, if you can recall, Mr. Bender, as to why this rural access was requested or why it was so needed?
Yes, there was discussion of that, of why, the purpose of the program and the purpose of the request.
Okay.
Is that responsive?
Well, I was just going to go on and follow up, you know, then if I might, Ms. Fuller, as to what is the reason, what were the reasons offered by the university system then for this $1.6 million that was in the governor's budget originally? And
the reason was that the college participation rate in Eastern Oregon is significantly lower than it is in other portions of the state, especially in the Willamette Valley area. And Eastern Oregon University, which has a history of distance learning programs and providing programs off of its campus in LeGrand, had developed this particular proposal as an attempt to affect that and to bring college participation rates in Eastern Oregon up to levels that are seen in the rest of the state.
Go ahead.
Just for clarification, would it be possible to get information about what the program would look like funded at 1.6 and what it will look like funded at 580 from the perspective of the impact that would have on access?
I don't believe that I would probably be able to provide an adequate response to your question. I'm looking at the chancellor to see whether he believes that they would be able to come up with some kind of analysis of that within the next day or two. Representative Jensen?
Mr. Chair, if the chancellor would, then if he's going to do that, would he also include in that all the rationale might be at Eastern Oregon University for this program to begin with?
Thank you, Representative.
Senator Devlin? Mr. Chairman, if I might note, and we'll see this later when Mr. Bender goes on to, I believe, the next two items or three items, is that, remember, in the co-chair's revised budget, they had included $1 million for three items, the Oregon Solutions, the Rural Access, and the OSU Natural Resources. And obviously $1 million would not cover all of those. And my understanding of this is that what we basically had a few hundred thousand dollars left in the OSAC changes that we have made. We used a large portion of those changes to fix the mentoring program issue in Oregon Department of Ed, but we had a few hundred thousand dollars left. So that's what it made it possible to do the rural program at 580. The PSU Oregon Solutions is actually, in terms of from our budget, is actually $600,000. The other $600,000 is being transferred in from economic development, and the $200,000 remaining to the natural resources. So it was basically we're trying to get the co-chair's approval of spending the money we had left. That's basically what it is.
Thank you, Senator.
The next item is the diagnostic lab at Oregon State University. The governor's recommended budget did not include funding for this item, but it was an item that the agency actually requested funding for. So I think it's not something that's just come up that has not gone through the process of the State Board of Higher Education reviewing a program and requesting additional funds for it. There was an amount that was requested for the vet diagnostic lab that was in excess of $750,000. The governor's budget did not include any funding for this particular request. The co-chairs added $750,000, which was only a portion of the initial funding request. And that amount is included here as well.
Mary Walker.
Thank you. I brought every file but that one. Do we have some explanation of what $750,000 buys?
We will be, we have asked the institution to reply with that information tomorrow, and they're going to be talking about these particular packages and their impacts on performance tomorrow.
Is that amount subject to alteration by this committee, or is it like budget notes where we get what we take, what we've been given?
I think everything's up for discussion.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, it is? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your birthday, Senator Walker. I didn't know it was your birthday.
If you want to be really nice, you wish her happy 60th birthday.
Oh.
I'm much gladder than that.
I am halfway to 102.
The next item is the Oregon State University Institute for Natural Resources. This program is currently funded at $250,000 in the current biennium. The governor's recommended budget would have doubled that by adding another $250,000, $500,000 in funding. In order to meet the amount of funds that were available in the co-chair's budget, this amount was reduced, and this amount is reduced in the LFO recommendation to $200,000. The way I got this, frankly, is I did just ask the higher ed, given the restrictions of funding in the co-chair's budget and the allocation of the $1 million, is there a particular level that they think that they would recommend for this particular item? And that was the $200,000 here. So with that, the funding would increase to $450,000 in total this biennium instead of $500,000.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am gratified that there is some money here for the Institute of Natural Resources, because I think it is an important structure for us to nurture. I'm curious if we could get some information about what won't happen by not restoring that last $50,000.
Thank you, Mr.
The next item is the Oregon Solutions Program that is operated and housed at Portland State University. The governor had proposed $1.5 million within the funding levels that are available in the co-chair's budget and from money that you found in the OSAC budget. We can fund that at $1.2 million in this recommendation here. So there would be a reduction of $300,000 from the level in the governor's recommended budget. The next two items, those 22 and 23, we haven't discussed in this committee before. They may have heard, I know that you've probably heard something about item 20, row 22, but we haven't really discussed it, and it hasn't been on this table up to now. And the reason why I didn't include it on this particular table is it makes it difficult to compare directly the general fund, because this table only shows general fund and lottery funds, it distorts the difference between the co-chairs and the governor's budget, if you just look at that number. What row 22 is the governor's budget, as you can see here, this is a minus $16 million. The governor's budget removed $16 million from the Department of Higher Education's operating budget, $16 million in general fund. The co-chair's budget restores that $16 million in general fund. So when you look in column G, how much general fund is there under the co-chair's budget, it's actually zero instead of negative $16 million. Our question is, why did the governor's budget take $16 million out of higher ed's operating budget, and why did the co-chairs restore that? Package 451 is the package to implement a particular bill that is now in Ways and Means, whose bill number escapes me right at the moment. But what this bill would do is it would change how interest earnings and investment earnings on funds of the Department of Higher Education are disposed of. Mm-hmm. Under current law, earnings on funds held by the Department of Higher Education primarily, almost exclusively, accrue to the general fund. So these interest earnings go to the general fund and are included in the state's revenue forecast as to the amount of funds that the legislature will have available from the general fund. The governor proposed changing this so that the investment earnings from OUS funds would be retained by OUS and not accrue to the general fund. The impact of this is projected to be a net reduction in $16 million in interest from the operating portion of the budget, which is the only portion we're looking at. There's actually an additional $3.1 million that we'll look at when you look at the capital budget. But from the operating budget, this would eliminate $16 million in interest earnings for the general fund. What the governor did was, in package 451, he then took out $16 million in general fund. So general fund didn't get the money. Higher ed didn't get the money from the general fund, and added $16 million in other funds, which is to say these interest earnings, so that the net effect to higher ed was zero. And the net effect to the general fund was zero. The co-chair's budget does not include this change in law, so that the interest earnings would continue to go to the general fund. This is a part of a policy of trying to maintain general fund revenue sources and to not sacrifice sources of funds that accrue to the general fund. However, in order to account for this change, the co-chair's budget allows the $16 million to be restored in general fund back to higher ed. So again, it's revenue neutral to them in the sense that now they're getting their funds in the co-chair's budget. They give their interest to the general fund and get general fund in return. In the governor's budget, the funds did not ever flow to the general fund. So,
I've been trying like the dickens to follow that. You've been doing a pretty good job, Mr. Bender, but I don't understand why the shuffling, or any shuffling. I mean, if there's no change anywhere, then why shuffle it? And what difference does it make if they get the money from the interest, if the interest goes to the general fund and then back? I mean, yes. I don't get that part.
You're correct. In this particular budget that's being proposed, there is no impact to the funding that would be available to higher ed or to all other general fund programs. However, the effect of the change would be, if it were approved, that these interest earnings would permanently accrue to higher ed and that they would not be within the general fund, and essentially the legislature, in its role of appropriating general funds, would not have authority to make decisions over where those funds are used. either now or in the future. So although it is revenue neutral, or it's neutral in impact now, the co-chairs were concerned about maintaining these funds in the general fund because the legislature determines where general funds are appropriated throughout the state budget. And under this change, those funds would no longer be available for appropriation throughout the state government. Instead, they would be restricted to use in higher ed.
And OUS could then, Mr. Chair, use them for any purpose they wished without legislative oversight? Is that the understanding?
No, you would still have oversight of their budget, but the funds would not be available in the general fund anymore.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mayor Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm recalling that we had testimony with respect to the difference between the interest earned with the current system of these monies earning interest through the Treasury versus interest that could be earned if they were managed through OUS. Am I recalling this correctly?
Mm-hmm.
And that difference was quite substantial, as I recall, 10, 12, 14 million, some very large number of additional earnings that could be obtained just by virtue of shortening the float time. And my question is, by preserving the present system, are we foregoing actually increasing earnings for the state?
Higher ed, in requesting this particular package, change in law, and the governor in supporting this change, did base this on the belief that if the Oregon University system assumed cash management of these fund balances and managed them on a more active basis, because they would have the incentive of being able to retain any additional earnings that accrued as a result of the cash management practices and investment practices oversight, would then they would be able to realize, by having these incentives, more income than is currently the case, where there is not an incentive specifically to OUS to approve investment earnings because they don't get to keep them. They fall to the general benefit of the entire state. Again, the co-chair's budget does not approve this change, however, though it does not preclude looking at other methods that may help improve the investment income of funds that are being held. It just, the budget does not allow or does not support taking these earnings outside of the general fund and restricting them to one particular agency budget.
Mr. Chair, I'm already lost in this thinking. If we're talking about $16 million, yet the potential exists to take 16 plus, let's use the most conservative, 10 million, are we really talking about 26 million, not 16 million?
We are talking about 16 million this biennium. The projection is that the earnings would be 16 million in this biennium, and under the governor's recommendation, there would not be authorization for higher ed to spend more than 16 million of additional interest earnings this biennium, even if the system was able to generate more funds. So in other words, the governor took $16 million out of general fund and then did not add in $26 million in other funds under the assumption that higher ed would be able to generate an extra $10 million more than would otherwise be the case. They left this as being neutral. Their requirement, and we have representatives here who can speak to this, was that this not have an impact on the general fund if this change was made, at least this biennium.
Still not helping a whole lot.
I think it would be helpful to get I don't know if the bill's in this committee, but to see it alongside the budget, since it's so interlinked between this budget, Mr. Chair. We could even, upon your direction, schedule it so that we're having a conversation all in one.
It's a House bill, I know.
Yes.
As a recommendation as well, LFO would recommend that you make any budget adjustments relating to the passage of that policy bill in the policy bill itself. That is to say, you would add the budget adjustments to that particular bill and not do that prior, you know, this bill prior to the passage of that bill. Because if, for example, you made these changes and then, which is to say, if you made the change of accepting the governor's recommendation, there would be $16 million less in general fund than there is in the co-chair's budget. And then if, for whatever reason, the policy bill did not become law, higher ed would be out $16 million. So we would recommend that you make the budget adjustments relating to that bill in the bill itself. Now, I repeat, those adjustments are not within the co-chair's budget, so you would have to speak to the co-chairs and get an agreement to do that. But if you wish to move with that, we definitely recommend that you would put those adjustments in the bill itself so that there would not be a possibility of the general fund being reduced and then the bill not becoming enacted.
Just so I understand this a lot better, there's a difference in the vehicles that are instruments, I guess would be a better term, that OUS would use to manage the float versus the Treasury. Is that correct? That they're still prudent, almost zero risk, but they have a higher yield than what the Treasury is, limited by virtue of either the Constitution or law or whatever restrictions may be, and that's why you're shortening the time of the float and you're also increasing the yield by using different instruments.
The funds are still held in the Treasury. I mean, higher ed holds its funds in Treasury. So it's not a question of where the funds are being held. It's a question of how much effort is being made to manage the funds to maximize the return on investment of those funds. The higher ed has indicated that they do not have an incentive now to make the kind of changes that they believe they could that would generate more investment income because there is no return to them of doing that. So therefore, they do not have incentives to hire additional people, for example, who might be needed to help improve the management of these funds because they don't get the return to this fund. And that if they did get the returns, then they would go ahead and make these changes, make these investments, and generate more income. And the co-chairs, again, did not accept this argument in their budget, and though they are not adverse to looking at other ways to perhaps incentivize activities that would improve investment returns.
Okay, and yes, one more question, because we have to do the mentoring bill and take care of that. So I don't know if Representative Jensen or someone... Okay, Representative Morgan.
Again, to the $16 million, one question and then a comment. Is there more investment income than $16 million that's involved here, or is this the whole return on the investment portfolio that's under discussion?
This is the whole return that is expected in the operating portion of the budget. The total amount in all portions of the budget is $19.1 million. There are no additional funds that are assumed, that it is assumed that higher ed would earn in the current biennium.
So the question then is around the aggressiveness of the management of the funding, of the fund,
yes.
Base fund.
The aggressiveness or the attentiveness might be another term. I don't.
Is there a way to talk to the co-chairs about potentially a budget note or a report to the Interim Audit Committee on the dimension of this, what the risk factors would be, what the return on investment would be, what the cost to the system would be to implement this, what the return over the cost would likely be?
Supposing, and I don't know if you mentioned this, but one of my understandings is, although it's difficult to perhaps compare this agency to other agencies, but wasn't
an argument made that somehow this would be different from sort of precedent in terms of how other agencies manage in terms of where the interest goes.
Yes.
I'm not making this argument. I'm saying this is an argument that
counter that by saying that we're actively looking for increases in revenue to higher ed here. And if we have one that is within an acceptable risk scenario and generates additional revenue to make it worthwhile doing, we're not doing the right thing by the citizens of the state of Oregon by not checking it out and seeing what the potential is. So I think we're here to change state policy if it makes sense to do that, and we should at least check it out.
Yeah. Got no argument from me on that one.
No. Well, I think with that, I think we're going to stop there.
Can I have one question on sports action?
Sports action.
I think this is a yes or no. Steve, on the assumptions on the sports action, since that's a relatively new item, is that in any way changing the formula that would it require a statutory change to do this because of the formula that we put into place 2 years ago?
No.
So how... it's not a yes. Well, that is a no. And I thought it was a yes. So how do you come up with $798,000, not you personally, $798,026? My understanding sports action is just the result of a formula that we have, and the money is distributed based on that formula.
The additional funding that you see there represents funds that will be coming into the university system next biennium above the essential budget level, because last session in 2005 the legislature approved changing the funding source and increasing the amount of funds available. So the numbers that you see there represent the increase in funding. It's essentially approving that allows the additional funds that are going to be received to be spent. Otherwise, if you didn't approve that, the money would be coming in and you wouldn't be letting higher ed spend it.
So I just, Mr. Chair, just so I'm clear on this, I want, and maybe statutory change is the wrong way to frame the question. If you are interested in allowing the agreement that occurred in 2005 around sports action to go forward unchanged, would this $798,000 be, would we not be seeing a reduction in $798,026? Better put, are we in some ways under this proposal taking out $798,000 out of the formula that we put in place 2 years ago?
This is a technical adjustment entirely so that the amount of expenditures do not exceed the amount of revenues that will be available. The governor's budget, as it stands now, had an error in it, and it would have allowed funds to be spent that weren't going to be received anyway. So this is really truing up the budget and setting the expenditure limitation equal to what we now expect funds availability to be. So it's not making any policy change in this particular case. It's entirely making changes to correct the expenditures so that all of the available revenues can be spent, but not more than the available revenues could be spent. If you don't change that, then we'd be showing expenditures that would exceed the amount of funds that we would expect to be available.
Thank you.
Thank you. Changing of the guards? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Bender. I'm going to really quickly, committee members, we're just going to thank you very much. Oh, yeah. Close the work session on Senate Bill 5515. I'm going to open the work session on 2574 so we can finish taking care of business there. I'm going to turn it over to Darren Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2574, if you remember, was scheduled for last Thursday. We just ran out of time. It is related to the Department of Education's operations and grant and aid budget. If you remember, this the committee actually approved a $5 million amount for the mentoring program, House Bill 2574 came through the House Education Committee, and this bill in its current form actually modifies a number of things with the teacher mentoring program, but instead of going through each one of those policy issues, I guess basically the reason it was here was to, for the funding side of it, you folks have already taken care of the funding side of it by providing $5 million, so that's kind of what the bill is about, and that's why we're here, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you very much, Darren, so I'm ready for a motion.
Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
I move the bill to the full committee for due class recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2574A to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, motion carries. Senator Devlin, who's the chief sponsor of the bill, said he will carry it to Senate floor and then the full. And Representative Edwards will carry it to the House floor. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Devlin.
We've talked to everybody on both the House and Senate side. Sometime in the next hour or so, you will get a quote-unquote homework assignment.
Yes.
I think that's perfect for the education.
I'm doing nothing more today. Thank you very much.
And we're hoping that you can complete the assignment by tomorrow.
You have all the way until
birthday. I have had nothing to do all day.
You have all the way until 3 o'clock. Classes start
all the way until 3 o'clock.
Yes. So be on the lookout for that one. So, okay. Closing work session on 2574, and we are adjourned. Thank you all very much. So.